Good evening, everyone. My name is Tom Hayward. As some of you may know, I've been giving talks about jazz here at the Claremont for a great number of years, even longer than Tom has been doing concerts at the Claremont. This year, I'm so happy to be sort of the introducer of a very special concert, and you'll understand why in a few minutes. But first of all, I have to remind you, do remember to turn back on your cell phones and your pagers after the concert. Okay, just a reminder about that. In my role as introducer to this particular concert and to all events at the Claremont, the introducer always says what's coming up in the near future at the Claremont. And even though it's August already, we still have some events. This coming Thursday, a talk that I'm looking forward to, Whistler and the World, the Lunder Collection of James McNeill Whistler by Justin McCann, who's at the Colby College Museum of Art. And then a week from tonight, our Saturday night concert is the Hot Club of Portland, which is a jazz quartet that plays music based on the gypsy jazz guitarist Django Reinhardt. And that's always a great show as well. The idea of this concert came to fruition between Tom Snow and myself months and months ago, it seems. And we've just been looking forward with such anticipation to it and doing some planning. And so let me tell you a little bit about the concert and about what has inspired it, and then we'll get to the music and the musicians. In these talks that I have given in the Claremont over the years, I've always used recorded jazz music played by the original musicians about whom I was speaking. So this year is really exciting for me because I get to talk about live music. And this is an opportunity I've never had before, and I'm hoping that it's going to go as well as I think it's going to go. And what we're going to be talking about tonight is Duke Ellington, about whom I've talked many times, but in a particular anniversary. This is the 75th anniversary of 1940. If you do the math, that's about right, I think. And it's the anniversary of his 1940 band. And there was something very special about this band in 1940 that continued on to 1941, 1942. But 1940 was this sort of pivotal year in Ellington's career. And there are a number of reasons for that. He had a new girlfriend. That's always going to revitalize you. And he was, let's see, he would have been 41 at this time. So, you know, midlife, who knows? Let's not go there. He had a new agent. He went with the William Morris Agency. So he thought he'd probably have a lot more exposure to his band, and he certainly did. He went with a new record company. His contract with Columbia Records was up, and he went with RCA Victor. And the sound quality of the RCA Victor recordings was like a step up from the Columbia recordings. So he was galvanized by that. He had just gotten back in 1939 from a tour of Europe where he was received like a hero, like a musical hero. And it gave him and his band a great boost morally. They felt, oh, we're doing something worthwhile. As you might know, the reception of black orchestras in some parts of the United States was, shall we say, not really welcoming. And even in northern areas, they were not perhaps as famous or as well-known or as well-paid as some of the white bands. So to go to Europe and to be lionized over there was a great boost for him as well. And then in 1940 was the first time that he made recordings with three new members of his orchestra. The first was Billy Strayhorn, who was an arranger, a composer, and also played the piano and became sort of the second pianist in the band. Then there was Jimmy Blanton. Jimmy Blanton was a young bassist. I think he was like 18 when he joined Ellington in late 1939. And as you'll hear, he revolutionized bass playing. So he was a tremendous inspiration to Ellington. And then finally, Ellington augmented his four-man reed section with a fifth player, Ben Webster, on tenor saxophone. He had never had a regular playing tenor saxophonist before. Webster was already well known, had a very distinctive style. And so to add this fifth voice to an already wonderful reed section, again, gave him lots of inspiration. So all of these aspects were coming together, and he started recording for Victor in March of 1940 and made about half a dozen recording sessions throughout that year. And he continued, as I say, through 41, 42. But these were remarkably transformative in terms of the inspiration that he received and the kind of compositions that he reacted with and the kind of performance that he got from the orchestra. Now, we can't fit the Duke Ellington Orchestra in this room. We can't even fit 15 men in playing musical instruments in this room, much less the Ellington Orchestra, but we've done the next best thing. We have brought, in some ways, those unique new voices for the Ellington Band into this room tonight. We have a revolutionary bassist. Well, we have a bassist who is so well known. This is Marshall Wood. He plays, he's the regular bassist. He's the regular bassist for Tony Bennett. He's been out on the road with Tony. In fact, we're lucky that we were able to yank him off the road to come and play for us tonight. He's also played with many other jazz greats, made many recordings, and we're so happy to have him with us tonight. Then we have Ralph Norris. Ralph has been on the jazz scene in Maine for about, let's say, 50 years and be generous. I'm not sure which way we're being generous. This among the other things that has happened with the trio for this program is that Ralph has literally dusted off his alto saxophone in order to play some tunes that were played by Johnny Hodges in the original 1940 recordings, in addition to playing baritone and tenor. So we have, like, three-fifths of a sax section in one man. And then on piano, of course, Tom Snow. And Tom is, I guess, both Billy Strayhorn and Duke Ellington. I don't know which hand is which, but Strayhorn added several compositions starting in 1940, and as you probably know, if you know anything about the Ellington Band, sometimes it became very difficult to tell which tunes had been written by Strayhorn, which ones had been written by Ellington. Sometimes it was difficult to tell who was playing piano on a particular recording, was it Strayhorn or Ellington. No more pressure, Tom, no more pressure. So what we've done in planning the program is that the first half will be all tunes that were recorded in 1940. So this is the 75th anniversary of these particular tunes, if you will. And then in the second half, we'll branch out a little bit more and play some other Ellington tunes that probably you're all familiar with. In fact, when we were starting to plan this program, it was not like, oh, gee, these musicians are going to have to learn these new tunes and everything. They knew, with one exception, they knew all these tunes beforehand. So it was no problem in picking out this tune or that tune. Oh, yeah, I know this one. I know that one. So it was only a matter of how are we going to arrange them and how are we going to play them in this particular night. So I don't know about you, but I am so excited to listen to what they're going to do with these tunes. All Duke Ellington / Billy Strayhorn all the time. So in March of 1940, Ellington went into the RCA recording studios and made, I think it was four, maybe six cuts, one of which was called Concerto for Cootie. Cootie is, anybody know who Cootie was? Cootie? Cootie was Cootie Williams, who was probably the primary trumpet soloist in the Ellington Band at this time. He'd been with Ellington since like 1928 or 29, something like that. So he knew Ellington's music, and Ellington knew Cootie Williams's style backwards and forwards. And he wrote this concerto, really, in which Cootie Williams was the soloist basically throughout the entire thing, and the band provided wonderful backing for that. Well, this particular tune had three different themes. The original line was 10 bars long, which is different from the standard 32-bar popular song, which is 8 bars of melody and then 8 bars repeated and then a bridge, so-called bridge, which is a different melody, and then you go back to the 8 bars that you started with. So that's that A-A-B-A form. This was 10 bars, and 10 bars, and then 8, and then 10. And that wouldn't have fit. So what Ellington and his collaborator, I think it was Bob Russell, the lyricist, did was they chopped the last two bars off of those 10 bars to make it an 8-bar song instead of a 10-bar song. And that concerto for Cootie became Do Nothing Till You Hear From Me. And, oh, yeah, I know that tune. Well, it was originally Concerto for Cootie, but you chop off two bars, you put words to it, and you get Do Nothing Till You Hear From Me.